What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, May 4th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league. And boy, it was a busy day and a pretty brutal one, especially for starting pitcher Tarek Skubal, who was placed on the 15-day IL as he set to undergo surgery to remove loose bodies from his elbow. It's a huge blow to not only the Tigers and Skubal's hopes of getting a huge payday as he's supposed to enter free agency after this season, but also to fantasy managers that likely drafted Skubal in the first round after he earned back-to-back Cy Young awards. It's a tough blow because Skubal is set to miss a significant amount of time. Initial reports suggest Skubal will miss 2 to 3 months with the surgery, but the average return timeline for this kind of surgery to remove loose bodies from an elbow is around 4 months. So we are not going to see Skubal until the second half, and it's probably going to be pretty late into the second half as the Tigers don't want to rush him back. So terrible, terrible news for the whole world of baseball as Skubal is set to miss a significant amount of time. Starting pitcher Ty Madden was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and he pitched in bulk relief versus the Red Sox, tossing 5 shutout innings, allowing just 4 hits while walking nobody and striking out 7. He induced 11 whiffs with 28% CSW across 81 pitches, and this was Madden's first big league appearance since 2024 after he dealt with a shoulder strain all of last year. Madden's velocity was down a tick, and he focused on sinkers and cutters over his slider and splitter, which were used more often back in 2024. Madden was actually supposed to be the replacement for Casey Mize, who just hit the IL, so expect another corresponding move to address the loss of Tarek Skubal. I'd expect Sawyer Gibson Long to get a shot in the majors until Justin Verlander is healthy enough to return from the injured list. Next, we have relief pitcher Gabe Spire, who was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation. He's been an integral part of the Mariners' bullpen over the past couple of years. Jose A. Ferrer will be the top left-handed option in that bullpen moving forward. The Mariners also optioned Cole Wilcox to the minors and recalled Josh Simpson in a corresponding move. Next, we have relief pitcher Eric Miller, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a lower back strain. Matt Gage and Ryan Barucki will be the top left-handed options in the Giants bullpen until Miller returns. The move was backdated, so expect the Giants to minimize Miller's stay on the injured list. Starting pitcher Trevor McDonald was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move to start versus the Padres, and he was incredible. 7 shutout innings, 2 hits, not a shutout, sorry, 7 innings of 1-run ball. He allowed just 2 hits while walking nobody and striking out 8. He induced 10 whiffs with 36% CSW across 81 pitches, and McDonald earned the King Cole as he led baseball with that 36% CSW. He threw 94% sinkers and sliders, with the fastballs finding a ridiculous level of luck with 15 called strikes and 13 foul balls while going 9 out of 10 outs on balls in play. That's just incredibly lucky. But McDonald has sort of been lucky in his brief time in the majors over the past 3 seasons. Sliders also chipped in with 5 whiffs, and the pitches combined for 37% CSW overall. They both had improved movement profiles, but the lack of a deeper arsenal and the presence of so much luck suggests that this was a one-time thing from McDonald. Regardless, he won't stick in the rotation with 5 locked-in arms in the Giants rotation present at the moment. Next, we have relief pitcher Danny Coulomb, who was placed on the 15-day IL with cervical spasms. He struggled to a 5.63 ERA this year, and so that's likely the reason. And he was one of the most consistently underrated arms in recent seasons, as Coulomb had a 2.60 ERA since the pandemic. So this would have been a huge blow to the Red Sox bullpen if he had been pitching up to those standards, but he had not been. He'd been pitching at a diminished level, likely due to the injury to his cervix. Starting pitcher Patrick Sandoval was transferred to the 60-day IL in a corresponding move, and that was to make room for relief pitcher Alec Gamboa, who had his contract selected from the minors. The 29-year-old rookie southpaw has pitched exclusively as a starter in the minors this year, recording a 6.23 ERA in a trio of starts, but Gamboa is expected to contribute out of the Boston bullpen. Lastly, we have outfielder Austin Hayes, who was placed on the 10-day IL with a calf strain. Hayes had just returned from a 3-week absence caused by a hamstring strain, so expect a longer than minimum stay once again. And in a corresponding move, outfielder Randall Grichuk signed a one-year contract with the White Sox after being DFA'd by the Yankees and electing free agency. Grichuk should be on the short side of a platoon at DH, with seeing some time in the outfield. Tanner Murray was transferred to the 60-day IL in a corresponding move to make room for Grichuk on the 40-man roster. In terms of transactions, we had a few top prospect call-ups. First and most notably, first baseman Bryce Eldridge, the Giants' number one prospect and the number 20 prospect in baseball, was recalled from the minors. Eldridge has massive power, having hit 25 homers in the minors last year and five thus far at AAA, but he strikes out a ton and struggled to a 54 WRC plus in his cup of coffee last year. It's unclear where Eldridge will play long term, with Rafael Devers manning first and Casey Schmidt leading the team in WRC plus as their everyday DH. But Eldridge did start at DH in his return to the majors, with Schmidt shifting to the hot corner to give Matt Chapman a day off. I'd expect Eldridge to find time at first base and DH, cutting in to Devers and Schmidt's playing time, but it's not going to be on an everyday basis, so I don't think he's somebody you need to go run to the wire to pick up in standard leagues. Outfielder Gerard Encarnacion was designated for assignment in a corresponding move, and the Giants also called up catcher Jesus Rodriguez, who's their number 18 prospect. Rodriguez not only plays catcher, but he's also seen time at second base, third base, and left field. He was acquired from the Yankees in last year's Camilo Duvall trade, and he's shown great plate skills with more walks than strikeouts, as well as 20 stolen base speed, but little pop. He's batted .330 at AAA this year, and Rodriguez will likely be the backup catcher while finding his way into the lineup at second base, third base, and left field. He started behind the plate in his debut, but with Eric Hostel on the roster, I think there's going to be a lot of competition for at-bats as a catcher, and the amount of playing time Rodriguez gets at catcher also depends on how much the Giants value Patrick Bailey's defense versus Rodriguez's offense, because Bailey just struggles at the plate, but he's great behind it. So if they value his defense so much, they'll keep him in there, but it's yet to be seen, because Bailey hasn't been playing every day since Eric Haas has been around, and Daniel Susak was also getting into the lineup a lot more before he got injured. So there's going to be some way that Rodriguez gets more playing time. I just don't know where on the field it's going to be. And it'll probably be in the outfield, as Will Brennan was optioned to the minors. So with two outfielders being removed from the active roster, there's going to need to be some change. It's going to be Christian Koss, Jesus Rodriguez probably seeing more time in the outfield. Our last top prospect call-up was catcher Joe Mack, the Marlins' number 4 prospect and the number 54 prospect in baseball. He was recalled for the minors and was the 31st overall pick in 2021. He hit 21 homers between AA and AAA last year and has been ultra-patient with a 19% walk rate and a trio of homers in 24 games at AAA this year. Mack is more of a defensive stalwart than an immediate fantasy impact, but he did start behind the plate in his MLB debut and could avoid being platooned as a left-handed hitter, even though he will split time with Liam Hicks behind the plate, as surprisingly catcher Augustine Ramirez was optioned to the minors. They said it was because Ramirez has struggled as a defensive catcher, so they're going to have him work on that in the minor leagues. I think Hicks is going to see most of the time behind the plate versus lefty, so Mac is likely to be platooned, but he still will get significant amount of playing time on the strong side of that catching platoon. I just don't think he's going to contribute a lot at the plate, considering that wasn't his strong suit in the minors. Next, we have shortstop Anthony Volpe, who's been out after undergoing shoulder surgery. He was activated from the 10-day IL and immediately optioned to the minors. It's sort of funny, but it likely doesn't have to do with Volpe's performance or the Yankees' expectations for his future, and it's likely just to give him more time to recover and rehab so he can hit the ground running when he makes his season debut, and I'd expect Volpe to be back in the majors by the end of next week. In the meantime, Jose Caballero will continue to see run at shortstop for the Yankees. Next, we have outfielder Jackson Churio, who's activated from the 10-day IL after missing the entire season thus far with a fractured hand. He will be the Brewers' everyday left fielder, and he hit the ground running, going 4-for-4 in his season debut. That's Jackson Churio. And a corresponding move, outfielder Blake Perkins was optioned to the minors. And in other Brewers' injury activations, first baseman Andrew Vaughn, who's been out with a fractured hamate, was activated from the 10-day IL, with Jake Bowers having established himself as a significant contributor at first base during Vaughn's absence. Expect Vaughn to see time at DH versus righties, then shift to first base versus lefties, so Bowers can hit the bench and Gary Sanchez can enter the lineup at DH. Greg Jones was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next outfielder, Zach Cole, was recalled from the minors. He'll be on the strong side of a center field platoon for the Astros until Jake Myers returns from the IL. Cole would have made the opening day roster if not for a fractured toe, but he's back and he could put his power, speed, and plate discipline on display as long as he limits the strikeouts. Outfielder Daniel Johnson was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, we have starting pitcher Chase Petty, who was recalled from the minors to start on the north side of Chicago. He tossed 5 2/3 innings, allowing 4 hits and 3 runs while walking 2 and striking out just 1. He induced 7 whiffs on 75 pitches. And as expected, Petty struggled with his control, but the lack of strikeouts was surprising. It was dope to see him throwing 2 miles per hour harder, up to 97 to 98 miles per hour with 4 seamers and sinkers, but Petty's locations were all over the place. And he relied most on a changeup that returned just 54% strike. So interesting pitch usage there to rely on the pitch that wasn't earning strikes. Petty was the replacement for the injured Brandon Williamson, but this will only be a spot start as Nick Lodolo is expected to return from the injured list on Friday. Next, starting pitcher Sam Aldegari was recalled from the minors by the Angels. He's replacing the injured Yusei Kikuchi in the Angels rotation and will start today versus the White Sox. And lastly, catcher Sean Murphy, who's been out with a hip labral tear, which he underwent surgery on last year. He was finally activated from the 10-day IL. He missed a lot of time with that surgery, and Murphy will be the backup catcher and will be on the short side of a DH platoon. So Murphy will still get a pretty significant amount of playing time for the Braves, but with his return, catcher Jonah Heim was designated for assignment, and as expected, he quickly found a new home as he was traded to the A's in exchange for cash considerations. Catcher Shea Langeliers was placed on the paternity list, so Heim will contribute immediately as the everyday catcher for at least the next 2 to 3 days, and I think he will stick as the club's backup catcher over Austin Wins. In terms of news, closing pitcher Yoan Duran, who's been out with an oblique strain, is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today, and Duran will return to being the club's closer. Closing pitcher Raisel Iglesias is also expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today. He's been out with shoulder inflammation and will return to being the Braves closer. Starting pitcher Steven Kolek has been on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain, and he's expected to be activated today to start versus the Guardians. Catcher Gainer Diaz is expected to be placed on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain, which is likely to lead to a longer than minimum stay on the IL for Diaz. So with Diaz out, Christian Vasquez should see everyday playing time behind the plate for the Astros. And lastly, starting pitcher Chris Paddock is being evaluated after a drop in velocity on Sunday. If he does require an IL stint, expect Braxton Garrett or Robbie Snelling to be promoted to replace Paddock in the rotation. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 12 games on the slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with first baseman Munetaka Murakami, who helped the White Sox to win in Anaheim, going 3 for 4 with 3 runs, a double, a home run, 2 runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. It was his 14th home run of the year, and it ties Murakami for the MLB lead in home runs. He briefly held the lead, but he was tied with Aaron Judge, who helped the Yankees to win against the Orioles, going 2 for 3 with 2 runs, a home run, 4 runs batted in, and a walk. It was Judge's 14th homer of the year, and he's tied with Murakami for the MLB lead in home runs. Talking about league home run leaders, first baseman Matt Olson did all he could, but the Braves lost in Seattle. He went 1 for 3 with a run, a home run, and an RBI. It was his 12th home run of the year, and Olson leads the National League in home runs. He also leads baseball with his 32 runs batted in and is tied with teammate Drake Baldwin for the MLB lead in runs at 33. That Braves offense has been on fire. Lastly, outfielder Jaron Duran helped the Red Sox to win in Detroit, going 3 for 5 with a run, a home run, 3 RBIs, and a steal to complete the combo meal. It was his 4th homer of the year, and he's up to 6 steals now. That homer went 381 feet at 99 miles per hour. With so many great left-handed hitting outfielders, the Red Sox have still found a way to get Duran consistent at-bats as he's seen more time at DH and in center field, and even found himself in the lineup versus a lefty yesterday, which makes this performance even more surprising. Duran struggled all year as this big game pushed his OPS barely over 600, and he has a 63 WRC+. Duran's performance last year suggested 2024 was an outlier, and this all but confirms that, but I wouldn't discount Duran's fantasy relevance. He's been super unlucky with a 244 BABIP, which is absurdly low for a guy that entered the year with a career 340 BABIP. Duran has hit more barrels than ever this year at 11%, and he continues to display elite exit velocities while sitting at the top of the lineup most nights. If Duran can find a way to level out his swing to avoid 50% of his batted balls being on the ground and 20% of them being infield pop-ups, he will go on a hot streak. I think I'd be buying low, as you got to expect those batted balls to start straightening out into line drives and hopefully some home runs, as we saw on Monday. So buy low on Jarren Duran, especially in the hopes he gets traded somewhere else to open up even more playing time. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Davis Martin, who helped the White Sox to win in Anaheim, tossing seven scoreless innings, allowing just five hits while walking nobody and striking out 10. He induced 19 whiffs with 35% CSW across 85 pitches and earned the gallows pull as he led baseball with those 19 whiffs. And Martin just keeps on rolling and is now tied for the American League lead with five wins. And he's third in baseball with his 1.64 ERA. Incredible from Davis Martin. The slider continues to be a huge new weapon for Martin this year, inducing a whopping nine whiffs and 69% CSW with an 85% strike rate on Monday, with precise locations, low and glove side, while four seamers thrive at the top of the zone with four whiffs and 78% strikes here. Martin's cutter remains the bridge pitch with 91% strikes and 55% CSW here. While changeups weren't spectacular, but the expanded arsenal is exactly what makes it so Martin so successful. It makes it so that he doesn't need every pitch cooking every start. And he won't be a Cy Young contender this year. I don't think we're going to see an ERA title from Davis Martin. He's clearly on a hot streak where he's been incredible at avoiding the heart of the zone with great command, which usually doesn't last all season for most pitchers, but you sort of just have to keep pushing play on this hot streak. And it could last a while longer with arsenal changes to support Martin's success, and he'll be an auto start versus the Mariners next. Lastly, we have Peyton Tolley, who helped the Red Sox to win in Detroit, tossing seven innings, allowing just one hit. He allowed two runs, but none of them were earned. He walked one while striking out eight, inducing nine whiffs with 31% CSW across 83 pitches. Tolley struggled after his impressive debut, but he locked back in here. And you can start to see a pattern forming where Tolley might be a hipster, and he clearly has a shag rug as a prospect. His ability to throw four seamers upstairs for strikes will be the biggest determining factor in his success here. Tolley's fastball found 77% strikes and 37% CSW, and he rarely needs much support given how great his fastball is at 96 miles per hour with 7.3 feet of extension and a flat attack angle. But curveball showed up for four whiffs and 53% CSW, giving Tolley another weapon. Considering he induced just nine whiffs overall, Tolley was lucky to record eight punchouts here, and his 42% put away rate supports that claim. I'd expect volatility from Tolley, and the hope is that he has his fastball command more often than not. Otherwise, he's going to risk getting put in the same sentence as the likes of Jack Leiter. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of safe situations or blew their saves, starting with the former. Caleb Killian worked around a solo shot for his first save. Ryan Walker just blew a save on Sunday, so Killian got the shot here, especially with Eric Miller on the injured list and Keaton Wynn pitching a perfect eighth. I prefer Wynn to take over the closer role eventually from Walker, but it looks like Killian is now in the saves mix as well. Devin Williams recorded his fourth save with a perfect ninth. Aroldis Chapman also pitched a perfect ninth for his seventh save. Brian Baker recorded the final out of the game with three runners on and a four-run lead for his ninth save, which ties him for the American League lead with David Bednar and Lucas Erceg. Brad Keller recorded his second save with a scoreless ninth. Riley O'Brien got the final two outs of the game after Gordon Graceffo worked into trouble. That was his 10th save of the season. And lastly, Andrés Muñoz recorded his seventh save with a scoreless ninth. In terms of closers to pitch outside of safe situations or blow their saves, Kenley Jansen pitched a hitless ninth, down by one. Jansen hadn't pitched since Wednesday while recovering from a minor injury, so this was a maintenance outing for the veteran closer. Emilio Pagan served up a two-run walk-off home run to blow his third save and take his first loss. And lastly, Brian Abreu struck out three in a scoreless eighth. He's looked much better over his last four appearances with just one run across five innings with eight strikeouts and three walks. And the Astros would love to have a locked-in Abreu closing over Brian King until Josh Hader returns. So it might be time for a speculative add of Brian Abreu, but it's got to be in a situation where you're really itching for saves. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, May 5th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Kevin Gausman versus Drew Rasmussen. We got two guys that are great night in and night out. Some of the best Hollies in baseball, Gausman with his splitter and Rasmussen with his command of three fastballs. We've seen some more secondary pitches coming out of the arm of Rasmussen, which hopefully hints at a higher strikeout rate moving forward. In terms of probable starters, we've got seven guys in the auto starts tier, including both Gausman and Rasmussen. We've also got Shohei Ohtani in Houston, Christopher Sanchez versus the A's, and George Kirby versus the Braves. Our probably starts tier has six guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Jameson Taillon versus the Reds. He's got a deep arsenal that allows him to pitch six innings against just about anybody, and the Reds on the road are not a great lineup. I love Taillon's fastball shape, not the velocity per se, but the rest of the arsenal should be able to support that fastball and support Taillon's success versus the Reds here. And also keep an eye out for Luis Severino in Philadelphia. He's looked much better recently. He's got better stuff this year, but he's been unable to parlay that into success until his last two starts, which were great because he showed better control. He's throwing more strikes, and he's going to be outside of Sacramento here in Philadelphia against a struggling Philly squad. So I think Severino could find some success for the third straight start there. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Tigers hitters versus Brian Bello and an opener in Comerica Park. Bello has a 9.12 ERA in six starts this year, and I don't think pitching out of the bullpen will change anything, so target Tigers hitters there. I'd also look at Rangers hitters versus Elmer Rodriguez in Yankee Stadium. It's Rodriguez's second career start, and he didn't look great in the first one, and it's not like there's an unfamiliarity factor here either as he faced the Rangers in his debut, so target Rangers hitters there. I'd also look at Guardians hitters versus Steven Kolek in Kauffman Stadium. This is Kolek's season debut as he recovers from an injury, so target Guardians hitters there. I'd also look at Mets and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We'll see Freddie Peralta square off against Michael Lorenzen, but, you know, it's Coors Field, so you got to target hitters there. And lastly, I target White Sox and Angels hitters in Angel Stadium, where we'll see Eric Fetty square off against Sam Altigeri. Neither of these guys are great, so White Sox and Angels hitters should be able to take advantage of that. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Aroldis Chapman has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, but so has Garrett Whitlock. So expect one of Zach Kelly or Greg Weissert to get a save opportunity for the Red Sox. Next, Brian Baker has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, so I'd expect Garrett Clevenger to be the next man up. And lastly, I'm targeting the Reds bullpen. For someone to eventually take over the job from the struggling Emilio Pagan. My money's on Graham Ashcraft, but I'd expect Tony Santion to get the first shot. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.